Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Smoking Steak Podcast. This is episode 86 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. I am joined, as always, by Enric this week. And it's an exciting week in Brazil for a lot of reasons. We have semifinals, quarterfinals in state leagues, but also everyone's favorite time of year has finally come to a close. The transfer window has slammed shut, as they say. And to help us break down the transfer window, we've got a very special guest. We are joined with Bruno from So Rare Brazil. He has graciously decided to stay up late today. So we thank him for that. Bruno, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. It's a pleasure to have a nice chat with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And Enric, how's it going for you?
Doing pretty well, Peter. Couldn't be any better. Transfer window has been closed. So now we have a chance to talk to Bruno about all those transfers that took place in Brazil and give our listeners more ideas of what has been happening over the past 2 or 3 months.
For sure. And let's just start off with a little bit of an introduction, Bruno, and maybe tell us about your website and what you're doing with So Rare Brazil.
Yeah, a bit of context. I'm not Brazilian. I'm Portuguese. I've lived in São Paulo for a couple of years, way back. And I got the interest about Brazilian football since then. I went to games at the Morumbi and watched Neymar playing against Lucas Moura at the time. Casimiro looked like a very promising young footballer at the time. So yeah, I kept the interest as a fan of the game. And obviously, there's a lot of close relationship between Brazilian football and Portuguese football since whatever I can remember. So it's easy enough to keep tabs on what's going on there. And So Rare, it came to my life around 3 years ago. I really liked the concept of fantasy football, as many soccer fans. Football fans appreciate, but in this case, it binds together with NFTs and the ability of you to make an investment out of the potential of the player that you have. So it was a lot of combinations between football and me being in the degree in economics and working on digital marketing. It seemed the right calling for me, and I'm enjoying it ever since. So I already did all the research I needed to do in order to play the game better. In a second layer of my normal interest I had for Brazilian football. And it seemed quite obvious to make a Patreon page and a website in order to help others that want to bridge the gap between their language or their interest in football and Brazilian football.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can see that link to your Patreon in your Twitter bio, SoRareBrazil.com on Twitter and on the web. And yeah, I heard your Spaces talk earlier this week, and you were so knowledgeable and really impressive. So that was awesome. But for the purposes of this conversation, let's start off with really the mother of all the transfers. Luis Henrique coming to Botafogo, the most expensive transfer in Brasileirão's history, coming in from Real Betis. So just wanted to get your take on this transfer. It hasn't gone the best for him so far. Mm-hmm. I believe he's picked up a slight knock, but mm-hmm. Exciting for the league, exciting for Botafogo. And maybe just give your take on the large sum of money, the player, and then maybe the possibility of going to Olympique Lyon.
Yeah, I think that's the main thing. You have to accept the fact that this is a Lyon transfer, not a Botafogo transfer. As you know, Botafogo is under a context of Eagles Group, owned by John Textor. And he has a clear policy of rotating players, developing them in Brazil, bringing them to Europe. And when things don't work out, like Jefinho happened this year, they get returned to Brazil. So that's the main context we have to accept, is that Luis Henrique is a Lyon signing that is on loan until the summer to Botafogo. You're right, he has been unfortunate with the injuries, so he wasn't able to show his potential. And he is really one of the best talents from his year. So I think we'll see some of his qualities on Botafogo, but I have serious doubts that he will be able to make the extra mile, to make the effort in order to be competitive, because it's normal for a player that has the expectation to play in the French league or in Europe, not to give out everything or to raise doubts in their own minds about if he picks up another injury and stuff like that. So exciting to see a Brazilian club able to bring a player of that talent at such a young age, because usually it's the other way around. But other than that, I think Botafogo will take some advantage of him being there, but I think they're making the signings. As you can see, the wings at the club it has at least two, three options from them to choose from. So I think their own planning for the season does not include Luis Henrique.
Yeah, and honestly, I was surprised a little bit by this move, because a couple of months ago, Luis Enrique was linked to other top European clubs, like maybe potentially Barcelona or a Premier League club. So I was surprised to see him return to Brazil after everything that he achieved with Real Betis. But at least we know that after his move to Botafogo, he'll be able to play for Olympique Lyon. Maybe not one of the best clubs as they're struggling at the moment, but definitely after he plays in Brazil, he's going to have a good time once again in France. And just really quickly, Luis Enrique, of course, one of the biggest names, but they have been other big names as well joining Botafogo this transfer window, starting with John, the goalkeeper that played for Santos and Internacional last season. I believe he also had a spell for Real Valladolid in Spain, but thankfully, he returns to the Carioca team, and maybe he will get some minutes more than Lucas Perry, and more impactful than Lucas Perry last season. Jefinho has also returned to the club from Lyon, and there have been other names like Lucas Alter, Pablo coming from Flamengo, Damian Suarez from Getafe, and Gregory from Inter Miami. What do you think about those signings, and do you think, based off this transfer window that Botafogo has been having, that club will improve its season compared to what we saw in 2023?
Yeah, I think they're respecting the philosophy that they set out to implement in terms of transfers since the last year. John Textor has a clear plan, and that plan is to bring cultured, tactical players, hardened by the European demands of intensity and tactical knowledge, positioning, etc., and use that as a leverage and an advantage to compete in the Brazilian league. So the names that you put out, most of them have at least some experience playing in Europe. So if you look at John's direct replacement for Perry. No question about it. Pablo is the replacement. Pablo or Barbosa, one of the two, will likely replace Alderson, also signed for Lyon. But you look at names like Damian Suarez, is a very secure right back that will lock the side, that side of the pitch, with consistency defending, good positioning, good tactical culture, and even gave two assists in the last game of the Libertadores against Red Bull Bragantino. So they are going for experience, they are going for maturity, and yet last year it nearly paid off for them. So this year I think they have the need to reestablish themselves emotionally, because what happened last year was too bad, and the fans need to reignite the flame with the club. But actually, about Botafogo, there's a funny story that not a lot of people, not even in Brazil, they talk about. If you see the stats, the X goals and X goals against, and the X points that they had last year, until they had Luis Castro there for the first third of the season, their X versus their real goals and goals allowed and X points and points was like I think they had 12 points more that they should have if the stats would be exactly on point. And funny enough, when the season ended, their X points were exactly the points that they finished the season. So if you can imagine the number of plays that use the ball on the roulette, given an high enough number, everything goes right back to its place. So Botafogo wasn't as competitive as they looked they were for most of the season last year. They had the super Perry in one side of the pitch, and they have like Tiquinho Suarez absolutely bananas in terms of scoring goals. They scored one goal, they locked in behind, and they won the game 1-0 or 2-1 or something like that. But I think they need to rebuild over that, because it was a successful season, if you look at it critically without looking for context. And I think they have the quality this season to in a more consistent way to fight for top six.
Yeah, I like what you said, especially about Damian Suarez. Our buddy Pete, who runs the Glorious Botafogo in English page, was very critical, as were a lot of Botafogo fans, about G. Placido last season. And I think this right back is much more secure. And also just on the mean reversion, yeah, Chiquinho's chart probably looks exactly the same. His XG, he was way over, you know, expected, and then regressed to the mean. But you're right. It's important that we recognize that it was a successful season and that they can build on that. Switching to a different club, same city, let's talk Flamengo. Three signings, all of them top quality. What can you tell us about their window? And I'm sure you've been keeping up with Flamengo, how powerful they've looked. And, you know, with all the players and quality on the pitch, do you think, how important is the man behind the sideline in terms of their stability this year versus last year, you know, with Sampaoli, who is, you know, could be a bit of a basket case at times?
Yeah. It was the only worst case than Flamengo last year was Corinthians. and we got plenty of that for this season for Corinthians. But Flamengo seems stable. And you're right, absolutely right. I think the main signing they did, it was last season with it. Absolutely. He's a world-class manager. I was surprised that he decided to go to Flamengo, because I think he has the curriculum and the quality to at least have a decent chance in Europe. I think the quality of the offers weren't that good for him to decide to make the move. So that's that. But we have to recognize that in terms of prestige, and sorry to say this to you guys, but in terms of prestige and economic power, Flamengo is way, way, way ahead of anyone else in Brazil and even in South America. And if you look at what happened with, for instance, Nicolas de la Cruz, they wanted the player, they tried to negotiate, River didn't want to negotiate, and they paid the release clause, and that's that, 15 million. 50 million euros. So you have to accept the fact that in all variables of the game, Flamengo is on top in terms of the quality of the roster, the quality of the coach, the structure that they have as a club in terms of organization and making the right calls. They have been doing since 2019. Okay, some issues in the middle, but they won two Libertadores. And they didn't won like in the 40 years before that. So they are doing something right. And of course, if you have the economic power, you will get guys like Nicolas de la Cruz, like Vina, and now more recently like Leo Ortiz, that were absolute starters. Vina played in Palmeiras, and at his time, he was the best left back in the league. Nicolas de la Cruz, for me, it's the best, the most impactful signing that happened in Brazil. Because if you saw him playing River, you know this by now. He can match his intensity defending as much as an offensive player. So he can get the ball and quickly make the transition into attack, making the game much faster. And Leo Ortiz is the kind of player that Tite and any manager in modern football likes, because he's very good with the ball. He's like he's so gifted with the ball that the main reason they got him is that was the first reason. The second is that he's a good defender, because Flamengo has some issues with the way they can start the transition defensively. So if you have like Pulgar and De La Cruz in the middle, you can solve that. But if you have a central defender that can bring the game with a long pass or make a deep pass or carry the ball to win some meters on the pitch, I think in terms of the tactical need that Tite has, the quality of the players that they brought in, they're spot on each one of the decisions that they made.
Yeah, I totally agree. Flamengo, of course, one of the biggest clubs in Brazil. And you look at the signings that you mentioned, but even the club overall, they're able to bring on players that are almost going to retire from European football. Like we saw Arturo Vidal coming from Inter, David Luiz, PSG and Chelsea. So players from Europe tend to go to Flamengo, tend to go to Palmeiras, two of the biggest clubs in Brazil and South America for those reasons. And talking about Flamengo, we cannot go along and not talk about the other rivals, Palmeiras, despite being from another state. They also have some great power when it comes to transfer market, maybe not being so much active last season. But this season, at least, they've tried with a little bit, like bringing Anibal Moreno, Lazaro, Bruno Rodriguez. So what do you think of those signings, and how do you think they can help and improve Palmeiras' season this 2024?
Yeah, I think Palmeiras this year is in a conundrum, in the sense that their level last season wasn't that good. They won the league because Botafogo allowed them to win it, in a way. But their quality wasn't as good as they shown before on the above. I think there's that. I think Abel needs to get some Alex Ferguson way of bringing back the ambition and bringing back the desire to win things and be competitive. But Palmeiras, by definition, is a combative team. They are not the best roster in terms of quality. They are not the most technical players available on top five or top six. But Abel manages to make them play as a team, and they have been very successful at that. So looking at the signings, specifically Aníbal Moreno was clearly a need that they had from last season. They didn't get a good replacement since Danilo left to Nottingham Forest. I think that problem is solved with Aníbal Moreno, because the level of intensity, positioning, the ability to go and be press high the player that receives the ball on his back before making the turn. I think the evidences from the few games I watched from Flamengo this season, it's spot on the right signing that they need to improve the midfield. Bruno Rodriguez is a typical Abel Ferreira signing. Abel doesn't like target men that stay there, like a bit like Pedro. Give me the ball, then I'll score a goal. He likes guys that can be mobile, can go to the flank, to create spaces, to press, to cut lining, passing lines and stuff like that. So Bruno Rodrigues is a perfect profile, but he got injured and they needed to make decisions. They decided not to bring another striker, which I think it's a mistake, especially considering that Endrick will leave in the summer. But Flaco Lopez is providing the goal, so we have to be optimistic about his chances as a starter. I think it's a clear bet that Abel is doing it on him. And probably he said he didn't want any transfer, any more signings, because he believed in Flaco. So let's see. And Lazaro, I think it's a very useful signing, because he can play left wing back, can play behind the striker, can play as a more cultural forward. So Abel needed to cover a lot of positions. I think Lazaro coming in does just that. So positive transfer window, not the best in my opinion. I think they could do a bit better, being the champion and with the full ambition to win every competition. And I don't think they have the depth they need to be competitive in all competitions.
Interesting. One thing I want to highlight here and have you kind of zero in on is you mentioned, you know, the need for another striker from Palmeiras. And one of the reasons you're going to need that, not only Endrick leaving, but critically, we have the overlap with the Copa America. Brasileirão out is yep. not stopping. How yep. important is it for these clubs, you know, as far as planning and signing, to have the depth at these positions, especially this year of all years?
Yeah, that's a recurring theme. Last season, we didn't have Copa America, but there was like two periods, you got midweek fixtures and weekend fixtures for like 6 and 7 consecutive weeks, which is completely nuts. Especially when you have to take a plane from São Paulo and go to the Northeast and coming back and play 2 days after that. So it's completely crazy. So they have to adapt. And some are able to adapt. Flamengo clearly is looking for another midfielder to cover for those 9 game week fixtures that will be which will imply that a lot of players they have, especially the Uruguayans, maybe Gerson, and a few, Pedro, of course, that will need to be replaced. But they have the depth. They have the depth. You can for instance, you can nobody remembers him, but Alan. They brought him from Atlético Mineiro, was one of the best midfielders playing in the league at the time. He was injured, okay, still not, I don't think, I can't remember when did he play like 2 or 3 consecutive games, but he's there. And the quality will not drop as much as, for instance, the Palmeiras that we talked about right now. Even Botafogo, the depth isn't as abundant as one can expect from Flamengo. So overall, I think it would penalize the top half of the table, because the players that will be selected play mainly on those teams. But hey, that's just another issue that they have to solve that isn't as different as they have during the season before.
Yeah, and you mentioned Galo, Atletico Mineiro. Not a whole lot of activity there either, but very capable manager. And I think up until De La Cruz actually signed, I think what a lot of people are calling one of the best signings of the window, although his form's been poor, didn't do great in England, had some personal stuff going on, but the 2022 Brasileirão player of the season, Gustavo Scarpa, joins them. Yeah. What do you make of him as a player? Do you think he's going to be successful or as successful as he was in Palmeiras with Galo?
I think so. For context, I think Atlético Mineiro, their best management decision was not allowing anyone to leave the club, at least anyone critical for them last season. They kept the manager, they kept the roster, a few nip and cuts here and there, but they kept the structure as a whole. And I think Scarpa really is the profile that they needed, that they missed last season, because they didn't have like a maestro, the guy that can make the pass or create the chance or be the set pieces guy. Last year, it was Hook who took the corners. So they really didn't have this kind of profile available. And I think Scarpa will be able to provide what they need. I think also Scolari was instrumental on making the deal, because Palmeiras wanted him, Flamengo wanted him. And I think Scolari made the call and convinced them that there he will be a key player and he will be special for them. In terms of tactical decisions, Scolari was forced to change his system in order to try to make Scarpa work in the team. Earlier on the state championship, he used Scarpa as a left winger going inside. More of an inside winger, but trying to fill the space in between the lines of the defensive of the opponent's defense. And now he switched to just one defensive midfielder with two wingers and a clear number 10 role with Scarpa. So he will be provided with the role and the freedom to be that player. And I think they can only benefit because they didn't score as much goals last year. And one of the reasons was there wasn't that creative force that Scarpa provides.
Yeah, and Atletico Mineiro doing the transfer job, but not changing too many players. And whenever they changed players, they brought on someone who was very impactful, like Scarpa, that played for Flamengo 2 years ago. So hopefully he's going to regain his form and provide to be one of the best midfielders, just like he was a couple seasons ago. And moving on from one Atletico to another, the Atletico Paranaense, they brought in Mascherano. We all remember how good he was for América Mineiro, scoring goals despite the team fighting for relegation and eventually getting relegated at the end. How do you think he is going to help the team? And do you think it's going to be a good replacement for Vitor Roque, who left for Barcelona a couple months ago?
Different profiles. I think Atlético Mineiro, despite all the issues that they had last season, and Atlético Paranaense are the clubs that are best managed, in my opinion, in terms of the scarce resources that they have. Mastriani is a clear example of a quality signing. I think they paid lower than $2 million for him. I think it was something like that. And Mastriani, I don't know where he has been. He's 30 years old. He scored some goals throughout his career, but nothing as serious and as impactful as I've seen in América Mineiro last season, despite being the team that they were, that finished dead last. So I think it will be the surprise transfer, and you can get probably the most goals per dollar spent. You can use that as a statistic, because the guy is really good. He has already scored 3 goals in the state championship and provided the 3 assists. And it gives you a clear idea of the solutions he provides to the team as a whole. He's excellent in pivoting with the players. He's excellent at attacking spaces. He can be a decent header. He can score clinically if he gets half a chance in front of the goal. So yeah, I think it was an excellent piece of business that Atletico Paranaense did.
Yeah, and I just want to go back. I think they're a beautifully managed club as far as from the management side of things. They've have the beautiful stadium, and they're really a model for a club, kind of like Santos, that maybe don't have the capacity to drive a lot of the gate revenue. And they've done a great job with, really locking in their place, one of the upper half of the table teams in Brazil. And of course, they weren't always that way. I want to turn to another team that's very ambitious with their signings. Bahia, of course, have the backing of Man City. Signed Everton Ribeiro, Jean Lucas, one of my favorite players. But they're also calling on Victor Cuesta, the European experience of Oscar Estupiñan, Santiago Arias, of course, as well, Chilean national. A whole suite of great signings. It'll be interesting to see how Rogério Ceni meshes them all together. What's kind of your take on the team as a whole? There's a lot of new pieces. Are they going to be able to, you know, mesh together and succeed? Or do you think that Bahia, it's going to take a little bit more work and more than just, you know, assembling all the pawns in the correct order?
I think they have all the right ingredients in place. They have a good manager. Ceni obviously finished fourth in Fortaleza some seasons ago, because so he knows the championship very well. He was champion with Flamengo. So the guy is a good coach. Not top tier in my opinion, but he's a good coach. And if you look at the, I wouldn't say they're like the dark horse of the competition, because I think they're no longer in that status. They're a bit above that. So the expectations from everyone are high. And the main contributor for that feeling, in my opinion, it's the midfield that they were able to build. Because you have Caio Alexandre, which was one of the best defensive midfielders from last season, playing for Fortaleza. He's a guy that has a lot of quality on his passing. He's not very intense defensively. I think John Lucas will be very useful in provide that role. But also, John Lucas is a very complete midfielder. He can do the six, the eight position, even the 10 position with quality. So that ability to use different characteristics in players supporting Everton Ribeiro, which is arguably one of the best players playing in Brazil in the last 10 years. Definitely top three in terms of quality with the ball on his feet. And keep managed to keep Colley. I wouldn't say how was is that possible, but they managed to keep it, probably because Citigroup has the financial power to do it. But that's class. That's class. That's class midfield. And if they are able to stabilize their defensive structure, not allowing as many goals as they did last season, I think they need a striker. Estupiñan isn't the guy, in my opinion. And Ceni also seems to agree, because he's using rather more often than he's using Estupiñan. But I saw him playing in Portugal in Guimarães. The guy can score the goals, and he's very physical, very potent. He's the guy that can be a good solution in front of the goal. But he's not as good as the midfield that will provide the chances that he'll get. So I think Bahia has all the conditions to be fighting for top six, absolutely. I wouldn't say dark horse, because again, it's Bahia and the quality of the signings that they did. And there's also a message by bringing Everson Ribeiro. It's showing everyone in the competition that took it to a next level, to the next level. And I think they'll do just that this season.
Yeah, Bahia, just like America Mineiro that we mentioned earlier, a team that could have been in a whole different story right now if they managed to get relegated. I don't think they would have signed that even half of those players that they brought in. And you talked about Everton Ribeiro. Many people might forget about this, but actually 15 months ago, he was playing for the Brazilian national team in the World Cup. So it just makes how crazy the World Cup is. It could be the beginning of the new stars, like we saw in 2010 with Luis Suarez playing for Ajax, moving to Liverpool after the performances that he had with Uruguay. But it could be the end of a beautiful story like Everton Ribeiro with the national team and jumping from Flamengo, who are giants, to a team like Bahia. But I think this is the perfect time to mention another Northeastern club like Vitória, currently promoted to Serie A. And they brought on some great signings, I would say. They brought in players that used to play for AC Milan, like Christian Zapata and Luis Adriano from Internacional. And they've also brought in players like Everaldo, Gian Mota from Inter Miami. But the thing that stuck up to me the most is the fact that from all those clubs in Serie A, yeah, despite them getting promoted, they have brought in 20 new players. And when you look at the list, there's teams like Juventus with 18, and the same thing goes for Atletico Goianiense. All of them got promoted. And I just wonder why teams do this. You played 38 games in the second division. You fought so hard to get promoted, and even players, I felt like, wanted to get the team even higher. And as soon as that happens, then they might end up going somewhere else because the club thinks, oh, wait, now we're in the first division. Now we want to compete even more. We're going to bring some new players. And what happens with the old players? They get punished for that. And I don't really agree with it. You look at teams that perform well in Brazil, like Atlético Mineiro, Flamengo, Bragantino, São Paulo, Palmeiras. They are in the low side of things because they brought in two, three more names and haven't changed much. And this could be the reason why teams like that perform better overall in the league and are able to win trophies. So again, I would like to ask you that question. Why you think teams from second division make those moves that I don't really agree with? And what do you think about the findings that I mentioned earlier?
Yeah, it's a very good question. To put things in perspective, the exactly same thing happens when a team gets relegated. And then they sell like a whole bunch of players and they sign like 14 or 15 players. And the reason is that the level in between the first and the second division is just too different. So they need to improve their squads in order to at least have a chance to be competitive in the league. And the second reason is the TV rights money on first division is completely different from the TV money from Serie B. So when you cease to have access to that kind of money, you need to make adjustments into your wage budget in order to cope with the loss of that revenue. And the only exception that I remember, and they still did a lot of transfers, was Santos. Santos that got relegated, they got rid of Mendonça and high earners, and they brought in guys that still have a decent wage, but nothing compared with the ones that they let go. Soteldo was offered to Grêmio in of course, due to discipline issues, but also to the wages that we have. So the gap financially and player quality level obviously reflects on that. It's just too big. So they need to improve by bridging that gap with better quality players. And also, final fact is the fact that there is a lot of mobility of players in from each season. Players that get free transfer or players that don't want to stay with the club that are easily negotiated to other clubs. So there are a lot of options. So clubs are able to make decisions. Some more structured and organized, like the Minato or the Paranaense. Others, not as quite as you, if you remember, Coritiba last year was a complete shit show, so to speak, in terms of what happened with the signings that they did. But we have Boazidis this year with Chris Yuma, so you never know what will happen this season.
Yeah, totally agree. And that Bolasi signing, I'm not sure if it's official yet, but it's looking like it will be very, very soon. another club, you mentioned Coritiba that signed Slimani. They were a disaster last season. A club that could be a disaster this season, we've mentioned them just briefly already, Corinthians. Made a bunch of signings as well. They chopped a lot of dead wood. They brought in some interesting players that have been successful in Brazil and elsewhere. Curious what your impression is of that club and how you look at especially players like Pedro Raul, who had that incredible season a couple of years ago and fell off for Vasco last season, was okay in Mexico. How do you look at a team like Corinthians?
Yeah, I think one thing we need to understand is that they have a good coach. Oliveira is a guy that is able to build good, strong, organized teams from the back. And I think that is exactly what they needed in order to be competitive, because they don't have the quality of Palmeiras, Flamengo, or even Atlético Mineiro. So if they are able to be organized and be aggressive and competitive in the Corinthians way, they can do a good season. The problem is all the things that's happening in the management of the club. As the new president is a complete shit show. So the level of amateurism the guy just seems not someone prepared for the job that he got. And there's multiple examples of this. The latest is them being left out with Rogers, because they owned the guy 9 months of image rights. The Lucas Veríssimo episode, the agreements with the sponsor that would pay the severance from the current sponsor that they say that the new sponsor would pay, but the contract said that the club needed to pay, the promise of paying off the debt of the club with an agreement with the Brazilian bank that was just for people during the campaign to believe. And the truth is, every single player in that the club at the moment has a rightful claim to terminate his contract due to that even today, a news from Yuri Albert being owned like 3 months in the image rights and fees from signing his contract like 2 years ago. So the club is in a very difficult position, and that can have an effect on the pitch. One can say, but they are professionals, not every player is a Rojas, so they will address it. The problem differently. And you have a good example of that. Maicon refuses to sign to Flamengo despite being owned also like 6 months in image rights. So I think if Oliveira can manage to create an environment at the club of, the board is solving the problems, let's focus your game on the pitch, let's be competitive, believe in yourselves, and the mentality of the club, I think he's been doing that, and as we can see some effects in terms of the state championship performance since he arrived. Even fans speak of Corinthians before Oliveira and after Oliveira, and nobody got angry about them not qualifying to the semifinal or to the later stage of the competition. So I think that is stable. I think the roster is good, short, but it's good. I think signing off Garro is one of the best pieces of transfer, the best transfer deals that happened this season. It's like a Corinthians profile, aggressive, creative, can score goals. And they are showing grit on the pitch, something they haven't been showing like for two or three seasons, or even more. I can't remember the last time that they turned the game around at the last minute, because they believed it till the end. So murky waters, mining fields, I think it will be difficult, but if it can, it has the potential to be a very nice story to talk about later this season.
Way to be optimistic. I like that. our friend Fabian may not be as optimistic. So we've talked a lot, but we've also got, we didn't even go over Fluminense, Gremio, Inter. Who of the players from teams that we haven't talked about that maybe jump out, maybe one or two names that you can think of? Of course, Pavon has been incredible Fluminense, of course, Renato Augusto is one of the big names that have come in there. Of the subjects we haven't touched, who are the players that really stand out to you?
I think the best transfer window, the team that took the most out of this transfer window was Internacional. Because they chose players that Koundé system likes, so they'll be a perfect fit in terms of what he expects from his players. I think if you are able to build Alan Patrick with Ener Valencia and Borré, you cannot not include them on the contenders for the title. I think they really did a good job in terms of signings. Also bringing Robert Renner, unclear yet if he will stay until the end of the year or not, but it's one of the best, most promising central defenders that not only in Brazil, but in my opinion, from his generation. So I would obviously make a notice of how well these international played out the season, the transfer market. And also, they brought in Alario, they brought in Yora, which is a very useful player in terms of rotation, given the number of games that they'll have. They brought in Fernando, despite his age, he's a very good player that is considered a legend at Sevilla. So it will bring ambition, leadership, and that's always good to have in a locker room. And not Thiago Maia, also a very good signing. They were able to get at the last call in terms of transfers. But we have to take in account that the transfer market isn't still closed 100%, because you can still sign a player that is registered in the state championship. So things can still happen. And the Internacional today just announced that they will let Gabriel and the Pena go. They are no longer training with the team. So if you are able to leave those, let those players leave the club due to lack of opportunities, that says something about the quality of the roster as a whole. So I would give highlight Internacional, and I would also highlight Vasco da Gama, because they are playing very beautiful football. Their defensive organization is crap. You have to be honest, they need to improve that. But they brought in quality players. João Vitor, despite failing miserably at Benfica and Nantes, is a strong, fast defender with quality in the ball, which is very useful in this backline of three that they are using. I think he plays on the right, so he can have that role, which is perfect for him. Rogers is a decent player that they got from River Plate. Hassan is a very acute vertical player that can score goals, as you probably remember a few goals he scored in Corinthians not long ago. As far as the promising young Argentinian, Galdames is a matured central midfielder that came to play straight away. No time to train or to improve. It's a ready to go profile that they needed. So I think they did a decent enough transfer window to be worthy of a man.
Yeah, and you mentioned two teams, and one of them being Internacional, who we agree with, or we agree with you, because not too long ago we had a chance to interview a commentator for Brasileirão Play, and we asked, who do you think is going to win Brasileirão 2024? And his name is Rodrigo Lazzarini. He said Inter is going to win it. And now you come up with this idea that Inter has the best transfer window. Me and Peter have pretty much agreed from the beginning that they are going to win the Campeonato Gaúcho, which they're probably going to win soon. So these are signs that people should take into consideration and think, well, Inter's probably going to be the champions for real. So they have done pretty good with the transfer window, and maybe if they continue, they can, of course, win it.
They're even better than Flamengo. Of course, you have to make the difference. Acknowledge that Rio de Janeiro isn't the same as the Gaúcho state championship, but they took the most points per game from all the Serie A teams in their state championships, even more than Flamengo. So you have to take them seriously for sure. In my opinion, if you are talking about predictions, I really think that Tite is preparing something very special with Flamengo, because they're on the 10 consecutive streak without allowing a goal. That's nuts. I think the record is 12 games. It was in the 60s or 40s, something like that, from Palmeiras. And you have to acknowledge that I don't know if you guys watched the game against Fluminense, but it was a beating throughout the game. Fluminense was muted throughout most of the time. Only in the second half they were able to react in a way. But the quality of the press they've been doing, the defensive solidity that they have, the quality they are able to create chances with a guy that can score most of them, it will be very difficult.
Yeah, and it's just scary what Flamengo is doing. You said it perfectly. 10 games without conceding. The only goal that they've conceded in 2024 came from a team that tied in Vasco da Gama Stadium yesterday, Nova Iguaçu. So I just wonder what he's cooking. And ever since he left the national team, I feel like it's just going to bring catastrophe to other Brazilian clubs. Maybe not in the second division, but for top division for sure. And Vasco da Gama, another club that you're surprised with the signings that they made. And looking at those teams that nobody thinks about, which of the promoted clubs do you think has done the best business? Is it Vitória or another team like Criciúma, Atlético Goianiense?
I think Goianiense did the best marketing, in my opinion, because they brought in guys with experience from Serie A. I think they have a decent enough midfield with Baralhas and Rony. Bear in mind that Rony was loaned out by Corinthians, and Corinthians demanded as a condition that he renew his contract with Corinthians. So they see something in him. I think he had a spell with Vitor Pereira. He played like 6-7 game consecutive games at the time, and you clearly see that he wasn't ready for that level in terms of positioning and decision making. But here he'll have a clear chance to be important in the team. And so they also brought in Yoni Gonzalez, Lucas Cal, which has like thousands of minutes playing in Serie A. Maguinho, he will not be a starter, but also useful player with a lot of minutes playing in Serie A. So I think comparing with the others, I'm a bit worried about Juventud, because the Criciúma at least brought some internationals to improve the team and have the quality. But Juventud, unless they have like crazy good scouts looking for players in the lower divisions that I don't know about, I think they'll be in trouble. I really do. But considering the signings from each club, I think Goiânia did the best out of the resources that they have.
Yeah, just looking at the list for Juventud right now, not a whole lot of players that you'll recognize. Maybe Lucas Barbosa, I think he's a former Santos player, actually, if it's the same Lucas Barbosa. But Popo, just nothing too exciting. In terms of the most underrated signing, who do you think that would be? You know, maybe a player that you don't think is getting talked enough about, or just a player that maybe you have a personal affection for, someone that you think is maybe flying under the radar, but is really going to make a big impact.
Yeah, I always find it amusing when a player that nobody in the Brazilian fan base knows about And they have that, a Brazilian fan has that smugness of football is the best football, and everything that comes here through the small door, he never affirmed himself on the top division. So, and then Deco or Pepe and players like that happen, and they need to, or Tiquinho Soares, and they need to realign their level of bravado, so to speak. And this season we have a player with that profile, which is Lincoln, signing from Red Bull Bragantino. That has a story exactly as Deco or Pepe's, because he left Grêmio early on. He played on loan in Turkey. Then he played for Santa Clara, which is a lower relegation fighting team in Portugal. He was considered one of the best three players of the league at the time. And not and Jorge Jesus picked him up to play in Fenerbahce. Things weren't as good because he was playing as a right, a left winger, or even a fullback. He lost his space since Jesus left Fenerbahce. So Caixinha, the Red Bull Bragantino, knew what was happening. He knew the player well. He brought him. I really think that people will be very surprised with Lincoln, because the quality, and more importantly, the ability to be practical. Because if a player has the quality but makes a bad decision or a poor judgment in terms of the way he receives the ball, Lincoln is a very, very result-oriented player. And if you are that direct as a player with the quality that he has with the ball, I think he will surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, Lincoln, a name that I pretty much remember, not from real life, having never seen him play, but I don't know if you played FIFA. Back in FIFA 22, I think he received the card, which was like 86 rated. And I was always wondering, I saw the badge there, and I know Santa Clara has a very similar eagle like Benfica. So I was wondering,
yeah.
Benfica, or is it another one? Because it seems different. Then I did my research.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, Lincoln, a name that it's going to be exciting for Red Bull Braga fans. But jumping onto our next question, who do you think is the signing that's going to be the most impactful and the best signings that all those Brazilian clubs brought into their team in this 2024?
I think we already talked about them. I wouldn't like to be repetitive, but I think that the impact that De La Cruz is having on Flamengo, it's absolutely crazy. And he will be like the engine room for that team. So in terms of impact, De La Cruz is up there. I think Garro at Corinthians has shown the promise of doing a very good season. And the third one is obviously Mastriani, because the guy is I don't understand. It's like Diego Milito. Do you remember Milito at Inter?
Yeah, of course. Under Mourinho, yeah.
He was never the same player before or after Inter. But the guy killed it during the Inter years. And I think Mastriani is the same thing. He's a player that no one talked about, even playing in Portugal for like 6 months. And the guy is showing the level and a quality that shouldn't appear when you're 30. He should appear when you're 23 or something like that. So I'm not to be repetitive. I will make a special mention, so to speak, to Moreno. I think the quality decision that Palmeiras did to solve that problem that they had at the middle of the pitch was perfectly solved with Moreno.
Gotcha. And on the flip side of that, is there anyone that you might worry might not work so well, a flop, so to speak.
Yeah. By definition, in my opinion, a flop is someone that creates high expectations and for whatever reason, things don't work out. I think there's a player that was extremely, still he's still young, but you can feel that the trajectory of his career is going down, and unless he does something about it this season, I think he will be in trouble. Not Luan kind of trouble, but some trouble resuming his career, which is, in my opinion, Gabriel Veron. He's an extremely talented player. He failed at Porto because he. If you know Porto, you don't know his coach, Sérgio Conceição, is like a Simeone to extend in terms of demand, intensity, and and either you cope and you survive and you adapt to it, or you can't be successful there. And the problem is the player, Verón, seems like he's more focused in other things other than football. So if he doesn't get his mind in the right place, he'll be in trouble. So Cruzeiro fans have high expectations about him, and I think they'll be disappointed because he simply isn't with the right mindset you need to be successful in football.
Yes, we've talked about so many names throughout the past hour. So now let's talk about the poll of the Brasil Real. We can mention all the names that we just did, but it would be pointless because we can go back in 2023 and look at names that came in last season as well, like James Rodriguez coming to Sao Paulo, staying there, Payet coming from Olympique Marseille, I believe, to Vasco da Gama, Luis Suarez playing for a season at Grêmio. What do you think this means for Campeonato Brasileiro, not only for the national sport, but also how much it could be knowledgeable for other European clubs or clubs all over the world? What does this mean for the football in Brazil growing in the coming future?
Yeah, I think it's a lifestyle decision that players didn't feel comfortable in making in the past because Brazilian clubs weren't able to pay at least a wage level that will make the transfer feasible. And I think nowadays most clubs are able to be competitive in terms of wages. Not as Flamengo competitive, because Flamengo can pay the same wage that a good player playing in Europe earns, but you have to be able to pay a nice wage to bring Ener Valencia, to bring Borré, because Borré had a market. Valencia had a market in Europe still. They weren't as old, they aren't as old as usually the on the decline phase of the career players would. I remember some years ago when De Rossi decided to play for, I think it was Boca. And I make the analogy there. De Rossi had absolutely no need to play for Argentina. But the guy loves the game too much and he wants to experience playing in the Bombonera and stuff like that. And I think players like Payet and others like him and Jean Rodriguez have their financial career lives settled. They want to enjoy themselves. In Brazil, they can enjoy themselves on the pitch and off the pitch. So that level of attractiveness is something new. I don't think it's exclusive in football because people tend to be much more mobile nowadays in terms of decisions where to go to live and to go to work. So yeah, combining those two factors, the level of wages that Brazilian teams can pay now and the quality of life that Brazil provides, it's a perfect mix for those kind of players to go to and play to in Brazilian football teams.
Yeah, it sounds like you kind of blazed the trail for guys like James Rodriguez coming from Europe to go live in Brazil. Bruno, this has been so much fun. This has been awesome. Usually at this point, kind of the last thing we ask is a prediction for the rest of the round, but you've made it. Flamengo is, I think, your pick. So since you've already answered that, let me go a step further. Do you think they have what it takes to maybe do what they did in 2019, the double, as far as the Libertadores and Brasileirão? And let me up the ante one more time. Could they be a triple winner, including the Copa do Brasil?
Do they have the potential to do that? I think they have. In terms of depth, quality, coach, structure, stability, all the boxes are checked. I think if you look at the level Libertadores has, I think their main competition is local. I don't see a River being competitive or a Boca Juniors being competitive. So their main competition is local. And when you're on the final stages of a competition, sometimes it's on details. So I think that if things, people often forget about this, but the 2019 team, Flamengo team with Jorge Jesus, they were like minutes of being eliminated on Libertadores. And in the, I think it was the quarterfinal or something like that. It was the early days of Jorge Jesus, things weren't stable there yet, and even some journalists demanding that the guy would be fired. And in the history, we all remember what happened. So, in terms of, I think Tita is not the exuberant, offensive, aggressive, he's charismatic, but it's not the same style of football. And I think Tita is much more a pragmatic coach. He likes to lock up things at the back first and score one or two goals, clings it, and that's that. So you won't see fantastic football. You will see organization, discipline, quality, decision making. Flamengo fans remember Jesus as fondly because the level of the football that they played was good to see. It was pretty. It was attacking foot-minded football. They knew that we'll be winning a game at home. I think Philippe Luís mentioned it. We knew we were going to win the game. Just didn't know if we were going to win it by 3, 4, or 5. So that was the level of confidence that team had. So being Tite a more pragmatic kind of coach, I think, yes, they have a better chance of winning everything, mainly due to the consistency they are able to amass defensively. I think that's the main thing that they will bring to this season.
And one last thing I would like to ask as well. You mentioned Jorge Jesus, one of the main people, I would say, for Flamengo winning that trophy in 2019, being so impactful. But they have been other Portuguese managers that currently play in Brasileirão or have been, like Abel Ferreira for Palmeiras and Vitor Pereira that coached Corinthians and Flamengo. Now, you as a Portuguese, what do you think makes those coaches so well in another foreign country in Brazil? And do you think that's their motive to proceed and to win with those Brazilian clubs? Or are they looking to have that history on their resume and make a jump to another move like Jorge Jesus did, playing or managing Benfica, managing teams like Fenerbahce, and now currently at Al Hilal coaching Neymar? So what do you think about that?
I think you probably remember this. There was a time that Portuguese managers didn't have any kind of reputation in European football. I think the main driver was Mourinho. and Mourinho won UEFA Cup and the next year the Champions League, which is still the only club out of the top five leagues that won the Champions League in the last 30 years, people start noticing. And this is exactly the same thing happened with Jorge Jesus in Brazil. So Jorge Jesus brought, it was so impactful in the way they played, in the way they structured things, the way he demanded players to improve, that the Brazilian clubs and their boards decided to see Portugal as a good opportunity to bring other ways, more professional ways, more academic-minded approaches, different from the Renato Gaúcho that we still have in Brazilian football, which is different. Sometimes it also works because Grêmio finished second last season. But I think clubs value that, and the fact that if Portuguese managers, if they are good, the adaptation is much easier because they speak the language. They are used to play with Brazilian players in Europe. So I think that is a trend that will continue. But it's not a trend that started with Jorge Jesus. I don't know if you remember, but we had Sapinto coaching, I think it was Santos. Before that, we had Paulo Bento, the former Portuguese national team manager, coaching Cruzeiro. And that didn't work out. I think hiring a Portuguese manager is not a synonymous of success. So we have some evidence from last season, like Vitor Pereira, the mice at Flamengo. But still, clubs value the skill and the coaching ability that Portuguese managers provide. We now have Abel, Oliveira, and the Caixinha. I think probably when the first wave of coaches being fired, as we all know, they don't last often long in Brazil, you'll see a few more names like Rui Vitória, guys like that, that are with our job right now, will get the spot. But I think the precursor is clearly Jorge Jesus, the guy that made it all up.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, this has been so great, Bruno. We really appreciate it. Where can people find you online? You know, if they're into So Rare, where can they find you and information and see what you do?
Okay. If you want to follow news about Brazilian football, you can follow me on Twitter, which is the Sorar Brazil. The handle is Jam Sorar. Not very related, but that's the easiest way to find me. And of course, if you want to know more about Sorare as a game, beware that it will take a lot of your free time. So be ready. But you can check out sorarebrazil.com for an early introduction of what it's all about and how the game works.
Awesome. Well, it takes up a lot of your spare time, but the flip side of that is you have so much knowledge to impart to us and to everyone listening. So we really do, once again, thank you. And thank you to the listener as well, especially if you've made it this far. We really do appreciate it. And we'll be back very soon with more action straight from the Brasileirão and the country of Brazil. But until then, have a great night.